Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program today. We come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We are streamed live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, as well as archiving these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We'd like to hear from you. If you'd like to send us an email, we'd like to get your ideas and hear what you have to say about the program, which, by the way, has been nominated for a Peabody Award, so we're very excited about that as well. We'll know in mid-April. And the email address is tmys at richarddugan.com. TMYS, standing for, of course, Tell Me Your Story. TMYS at richarddugan.com. Today's program, special program, we're going to be delving into the depths of the human anatomy, if you will. One organ in particular, the heart. We've talked a lot about the heart with various guests on this program. Greg Braden has brought to our attention the fact that it isn't just the seat of emotion. There's more to it than that. And we're going to talk today with a very special guest we've had on the program before. His name is Baptiste De Pape, and he is one of the producers of a new movie that is out called The Power of the Heart. And I want to thank you so much for joining us. And you are actually in Sedona, Arizona, a beautiful part of the state of Arizona. I've been there many, many times as a former resident of the state and native, as a matter of fact. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on your show, Richard. It's a pleasure. And I really enjoyed our conversation the last time I was on your show.
This is very exciting to talk further about this. And, of course, the movie, of course, you wrote the book, and we're going to talk further about that. But I find it interesting that conversations like this and concepts as well, and more than just theoretical, mind you, are actually able to translate very well to the visual arts, if you will. And I say it in that context because if I say the silver screen, well, people are watching it on their computers or whatever the case might be. But was there a major challenge in that regard in terms of not so much the whole issue of, say, writing a screenplay for the movie as much as just really getting the visual aspects, if you will, of this whole concept, and then we're going to dive into what we're talking about in terms of the power of the heart. Was there a major challenge in that regard?
Yes. I mean, the director we hired for this project was Drew Harriet. He's an Australian-born director, and you may know him because he also you may have heard of him because he also directed The Secret. It was a big success back in 2006 and 2007. And I had a lot of conversations with him about, you know, how are we gonna, you know, do this? Because you know, you have the world of the mind, let's say, and you have the world of the heart. And how are you gonna show that transition? You know, we want to show people who are living from the mind and then are going through a transition and start living from the heart in the movie. And I mean, we had a lot of conversations about that. And then eventually we decided, okay, let's create the world of the mind in a black and white visuals, in black and white visuals. And when people open their heart and start living from the heart, let's, you know, create color, make it very colorful. So, you know, when you're producing a movie, you want to show the world of the heart. You want to show the world of the mind. You want to show the differences. So we said, okay, the world of the mind is black and white, and the world of the heart, when people open their hearts, it's going to be very colorful. And so that's how we showed the transition from going to the mind to the heart in the movie.
I know that I remember watching one of the Oscar presentations, and one of the sound editing or sound effects winners was up sharing their thoughts, having won, that without it, a movie really wouldn't be much of a movie. You really wouldn't have the drama. So tell me about that in terms of and I just pushing aside the whole thing. Well, let's just have a heartbeat beating through the entire movie to really emphasize the power of that. Doesn't seem to me to be as effective as I'm sure some of the other aspects, because it's both a visual, both visual artistry, as you've just spoken about. And I love the concept of the mind in black and white and the heart in color. I think it's a great and dramatic contrast, an appropriate contrast as well. But what about in terms of the auditory experience of the viewer?
Well, I was in the editing room with the editors and with Drew Harriet most of the time, but our the music composer, DJ Beerpoot, was also there with us most of the time because he wanted to work very closely. We really wanted him to be part of the whole edit because, you know, in every movie production, the music is the last thing that you're going to produce. So you first create the edit, and then underneath that, we were creating the music. And he was so closely involved in that process. And Vijay is a very, very gifted composer. He's a pupil of, you know, Hans Zimmer. You know, we were very fortunate to work with him. And I think, you know, everyone who sees the movie, everyone starts to talk about how good the music is. And the music really enhances the experience. And the music really helps to open the heart. I'm very, very happy of, you know, how the music really enriches and empowers the message of the movie.
Well, I know that in some movies they will actually have the film playing up on a giant screen. Yes. In the room with the musicians, whether it be a symphony orchestra or a band, whatever the instruments are, and they are actually playing along with the film, as opposed to, okay, go ahead and record this in the studio and then we'll match it up later.
Well, that's how we did it, too. The only thing is we didn't play it on a very big screen, but it was a bigger screen than a television screen. But,
right.
But we did it the same way. Yeah.
And that gives the performers, the musicians, a greater – they're more in touch with as they're playing than if they were just, here's the sheet music. Let's put this together and – it's along the same lines as, you know, I love a lot of animated as well as other types of voiced presentations. And I keep hearing about how, oh, no, none of these people were in the same studio at the same time. And I'm thinking, what a loss, because the energy, it's like, Baptiste, I would love to just have you here in studio and you and I chatting, because the energy would be so much richer. Yes. So to me, to have the musicians being able to view and, in a manner of speaking, actually participating in the movie in that fashion, as opposed to maybe having the musicians actually out on the set as you are filming live music, as it were. You know how they used to do that back in the 40s and the 50s, with especially with radio, they'd have live orchestras. As the presentation was going on. And I know it's got to be, I mean, with the finished product, what does that do for you? How does that make you, and I don't even know, how does that affect your heart in the context of this? And then we're going to jump into the aspects of the power of the heart. But how does that impact you?
Well, I was closely involved in all the stages of the production. So I developed the script with a team. I hired the director, and I worked very closely with the director and also with the editors, and of course also with the music composer and with the whole production team. And the thing is, as a producer and also as a director, and as you know, everyone who is involved, we don't get to see the movie for the first time. You know, you never get to see the movie for the first time when you're involved. I mean, the beautiful thing of going to a film theater and experiencing a movie for the first time and have that first experience of a great movie. You know, everyone knows, I'm like, oh my God, I just saw. You know, when I was small, I had it with E.T. from Steven Spielberg. The first time I saw it as a kid, I was like, oh, my God. And that first experience, you will always remember how good that felt.
Mm-hmm.
And this experience. So for me, the most rewarding thing, because I'm, you know, touring the world right now to promote the movie and the book, and the most rewarding thing right now is experiencing the movie with other people, because through their eyes I get to, you know, experience and see the movie for the first time, and I see their responses to it and how it opens their heart and how they are touched. And that's for me, the way I get to see the movie now, not, you know, not through my own eyes anymore, but through the eyes of other people, because they give me the experience of what it is to see it for the first time, and that's really very, very rewarding, and very, I mean, it's really something that really is very fulfilling to me to be able to do that.
And yeah. I can sort of relate to that in terms of producing different things for radio and other types of recorded books and so forth. And I listen to it over and over again to get it just right. And it's like, okay, so now can I listen to this with fresh ears? Well, it's kind of impossible to do that because I've already heard it in minute detail over the hours that I may have been working on something. But I must say it is quite a thrill. I still remember the very first radio theater that I produced at the age of 21, and that's going back quite a number of years to 1981. Never done it before. Produced it. We worked for 18 hours on it and came up with a 33-minute production. And I still thrill just at the thought of the process that we went through. It was so extraordinary. So I'm curious as to this process. You say you wrote the script, and of course you were involved intimately in just about every single aspect of this film. Did you find that you had any kind of struggles getting through the process, or did it just flow? It was like the universe said, Baptiste, this is yours. Just go with it. We're right there. We're going to make it. You're going to fly through this.
No, it wasn't like that. it was really a big challenge. I mean, it took us 5 years to produce this movie. There were a lot of challenges, and mainly also because, you know, I have a background as a lawyer, and I didn't know anything about film production, so I really had to figure everything out myself. So I started speaking with film producers to learn how to get financing for a movie and how, you know, how the whole infrastructure works and how to hire the right people. And I realized that, you know, the film producers that I contacted in the city of Amsterdam, where I'm from, that they didn't really want to talk to me because they thought, okay, here's this lawyer and he wants to make a spiritual movie about the heart and, you know, we don't do that and there's no money and it's not interesting. So it was challenging from the beginning already. So I thought, okay, if the film producers don't want to speak with me, how can I learn how to produce a movie? So I thought, okay, maybe there are, you know, retired film producers because at least they have time to speak with me. So eventually I found a retired film producer and he said, okay, if you buy me a cup of coffee, then I'll speak to you. So it was a really a challenging process from the beginning. And Mark Nepo says it beautifully in the film. You know, he says it's like a match that holds fire until it strikes against something. There is no flame. And I think that so those challenges for the full potential and the full fire to come out, I was also forced to go with my intuition, with my heart's intuition most of the time because I really need to do it. And it took me, you know, I think the first 2-3 years were really about how to produce and how to find the right people, how to get it financed and everything. Drew Harriet came on board as a director, then things really started to flow because, you know, I think eventually it's all about finding the right people. If you have the right people, then you can really flow. And eventually, I found the right team. But it was challenging from the beginning, yes, I would say that. But I'm happy because it was a very good schooling for me.
Now, obviously, you have the finished product at the end of 5 years. You have a movie.
Yes.
But what have you achieved through this process, setting aside the movie? Through the creation, what have you observed that you have created or achieved?
You mean personally, you mean in a transformative way?
Yes.
Personally?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Well, again, because I didn't know how to produce a movie because I had no background in film production, but I really felt, you know, that I wanted to do this from the bottom of my heart, I really was forced to go with my intuition most of the time because I didn't have the knowledge of how to do it. I didn't have the support of how to do it. So I was forced to go with my heart's intuition, and I really, it really transformed me in that way. That now, because I had no other choice, I really now know that the heart is a source, a reliable source of wisdom and intelligence that you can really rely on and can work with. I was forced to go with my intuition most of the time, and I really learned that, okay, you can trust your intuition, you can trust your heart's intuition, and the only way to learn to trust it is through experimenting. And I've been experimenting with it for 5 years now because I had no other choice. And I really learned that, if you compare the mind with the heart, and if you're on a boat on the river, then the mind can only see the next turn on the river. But from that same perspective on that boat, the heart can see the whole river from source to sea. And I've said it before, but I really know now every time when I have to make a choice, I can look at all the, all the pros and cons on paper. And I can really look at it from a linear, rational perspective. But I've also learned that, first of all, I have to learn to listen to, how does it feel in my heart? Does it make me feel alive? How does it feel energetically? And I think every time you make choices that feed the aliveness of your heart, then, you are following your heart, and then you make the right choices. And, you cannot make those choices from your very limited brain or mind, I would say. And so that has been the biggest transformation. I think that, the most important authority in my life really has become my inner authority, my heart.
Before we go to break, I want to talk to you about the people involved, not only behind the scenes, but also on camera. Sure. When I watch movies like this and I see all of these different people from so many different backgrounds, but fairly notable people. I mean, these are people that most of us who delve into metaphysics and the spiritual world are aware of.
Yes.
It's like, okay, these people, big names, you'd think that, I've got my own projects. I really don't have time to deal with you, Mr. Papa. I just don't have time. And you don't get the kind of egos in that sense that you seem to, let's say, in the mainstream world. The diversity of personalities must have been extraordinary. Were there those who, when they first heard about it, they just wanted to jump on right away? They say, hey, you had me at hello kind of thing. Let's go. Let's do this.
Well, in the beginning, it was really challenging because who is Mr. De Pape? Nobody knew me. But once you have a few big names on board and a few, the first two I've interviewed were Jane Goodall and Deepak Chopra, then doors open for you. It gets easier. Of course, I really interviewed remarkable people like, Dr. Maya Angelou. She passed last year.
Mm-hmm.
Paulo Coelho, the author of The Alchemist. Isabel Allende, she just got the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Obama in November. I mean, those are really, this is an exceptional category, if you look at the lives those people live, I mean, they went through a lot. It was not easy in the beginning, like I said, but it became easier once you have a few big names on board and, doors start to open for you. Yes.
Yeah. We're going to continue our interview with Baptiste Depape, and we're going to talk more about the power of the heart. What do we mean when we say power? And the heart, are we just specifically speaking of the physical muscle that pumps the blood through our veins? And a point to maybe consider, folks, think about this. It has been said in the ancient texts that that the blood that is pumping and coursing through our veins, that is where life resides. Well, if that's the case, the heart is what's pumping that life through our veins. Interesting. Think about that as we take our break. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're joined by Baptiste De Pape, and we're talking about the movie, The Power of the Heart, which is created from the book by our guest here on the program. And when we talk about the power of the heart, Can you, we've got plenty of time, elaborate. What do you mean by power?
Well, since the beginning of recorded history, all the great teachers of the world's spiritual traditions and religions have described the heart as the source of true power and understanding. And the whole project is really, I'm trying to discover, if the heart really is a reliable source of wisdom and intelligence, and if it really is a reliable source of wisdom and intelligence, how can we tap into that intelligence of the heart? And the question is, of course, the heart, is it more than a pump? And, the pump is already very interesting. There is research of the HeartMath Institute. You can see it in the beginning of the movie, where they show that the physical heart has the capacity to see into the future. And they have done those experiments in many independent laboratories all over the world. And it turns out that the heart can see future events. How does it work? I mean, the heart sees the event first and then is sending signals to the brain, and the brain is then sending it to, the rest of her body. That's, let's say the goosebump feeling that we sometimes have, like, oh, I had goosebumps or I already knew it. But the heart sees things before they take place.
Mm-hmm.
So the heart is more than just a pump. It is a physical organ that possesses an intelligence that far surpasses that of the mind. And, of course, there's also the heart as, let's say, the seat of the soul, the place in us where we make contact with our higher consciousness, with our soul, the part of us that lives when the body is no longer there. So I think we're talking about two kinds of wisdom, the heart as the pump, as, as the scientific part of us that is able to see into the near future, and also the heart as the soul, as an inexhaustible part of us that is, can guide us and that can help us to tap into our essence and the knowledge of our higher self.
What I find so extraordinary, and the thought that just hit me, was the more we dissect the human body, and in this case the heart, and both literally and metaphorically dissect, the more esoteric the human body becomes, less physical, less tangible, more metaphysical. It's like you can't put your hands on the attributes of the heart you just described. And so the more we physically handle and manipulate and play with and try to figure out the various parts of the human body, the less tangible we, in a manner of speaking, the less tangible and almost the less material we become. And I think maybe that's sort of the point.
Well, I think this is the point. I think it is important to see who we really are. I mean, we have our personalities, we have, let's say, our egos, we have our bodies, but in essence, we are the soul. That's the thing that is still there, that's our essence, and it's still there when our body is no longer there. And the interesting thing is, as long as you have life, you have purpose. Personalities have agendas, maybe, more status or more money or more abundance, but our soul, our higher self, also has an intention to be here in this world, and it's whispering to us all the time. It's talking to us, and because we have so many distractions, we don't listen. We don't hear it oftentimes, and if we don't listen to the whispers, then eventually it will come back to us, screaming in our face. And that's always a crisis situation. So if we don't listen to the whispers and we keep listening to our personalities and our egos, then eventually we'll have a kind of crisis where, our soul is saying, okay, now you're going to listen. I've been whispering to you all the time, but you're not listening. So it's very important to distinguish that our personalities have intentions and agendas, but also our souls have an agenda. And I think it's our purpose in our life to start to listen to what our heart, our soul is trying to communicate to us. And it's very important.
What I'm getting, excuse me, from what you're saying is that if we would listen and then just follow,
yes,
then we wouldn't have a lot of the disorders, if you will, that plague our both our physical bodies as well as our society.
Yes, yes, that's true. That's true. That's completely true.
I know that. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yes. No. Please go ahead. No,
well, I was going to say I know that when I was going through a personal growth program many years ago, I remember writing down on a large piece of paper. They asked us to write down a statement, and my statement was that I was going to listen to, and then in all caps, and follow the promptings of, if you want to say the heart, you still small voice, and so forth, because it doesn't do a whole lot of good to listen if you're not going to follow. And so what I find, I think, is true is that those people who have listened maybe in the past and just haven't followed, they've actually said, I don't want to listen anymore. I'm going to go do my own thing. That's when they begin that period of extreme as well as excruciating challenges in their lives, whether it be the manifestations of physical ailments and conditions, or whether it be of external physical life challenges, even to the extent of some of the conflicts that we see worldwide.
Yes.
You know, because these groups of people who are carrying out these atrocities that, as we label them, they're made up of individuals. If the individuals just stopped and started listening and following their heart, the atrocities would stop overnight, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, everything that's happening in the world is a reflection of our consciousness, of our awareness. And, you know, I think if we get the inside right, then the outside will fall into place.
Yeah.
And we can only get the inside right if we start listening to our hearts and to our souls. But it is really important, because a lot of people are confused because there are so many distractions. There's so many fear in our media. People don't get the right guidance. And to be honest, I don't think anyone can tell anyone what they are supposed to do. I think the most important authority, again, in everyone's life is their heart. I cannot tell you, Richard, what you are supposed to do with your life. And nobody can tell you, not your friends, not your relatives. Nobody can tell you, because only your heart knows what you're supposed to do with your life. And Mark Nepo says it beautifully in the movie. He says, a fish cannot drown in water. A bird cannot fall from the sky. Each creature must find their own God-given element. And it's easy for fish and it's easy for birds. They know their element, but it's not so easy for us human beings. And why is that? Because, you know, when we are born, we don't get the blueprint of what we're supposed to do. We don't get the manual. And I don't think we can get there through thinking. I think our thinking is very limited. We can't get there through thinking. So the only thing to get there is to open our hearts and to listen to what it's saying to us. And if we don't find that alignment with our hearts first, I don't think we will be able to deal with all the challenges we have to deal with right now.
I remember back in my 20s, someone came to me and said, God told me to tell you, and I stopped them. And I said, excuse me, but if God wants to talk to me, he can call me. He can even call me collect. This was just the way I would put it, you know. I'm here. Yeah. He knows where I am. and I appreciate the fact that you think that you have a message for me. And yet, at the same time, I do believe we have messages for each other, but it's in a different context.
Yeah, but you have to, you know, if someone says, God told me, you have to see, does it resonate with and how I feel? Does it resonate with my heart?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, you could also tell them, well, I have my own personal connection with God, too, so I can listen to him directly. You know? You don't.
Exactly. Exactly. We're talking with Baptiste de Pape, and we're talking about the movie The Power of the Heart that is available Just look it up online. You can find it very easily. It's from the book by our guest, Mr. DePape, and it's called The Power of the Heart, and we certainly encourage you to check it out. We can certainly find it, I'm sure, by Googling it and going to your website as well, which we are linked to as well. So we encourage you to do that.
When the website is thepowerofheheart.com, very easy.
Absolutely. Thepowerofheheart.com. Don't forget that. And again, we will be linked to that with this interview, which will be available up on the website as well. When you first started putting pen to paper, and I say that metaphorically only because you probably were using a computer of some sort as well in writing The Power of the Heart, was any of this a thought, even in the back of your mind, that there was the possibility that this could actually be transformed? Or was it just, hey, these are the ideas, I need to get these down, I need to, you know, my heart is telling me I need to get this information out?
Well, I had no idea of what I was doing, actually. So because I the thought came to me, and when it came to me, it felt like coming home. It felt like clarity. It felt like peace. It felt like an overwhelming sense of love and coming home. It just came to me. You have to make a movie about the heart. And I didn't know anything about the heart, and that was actually a good thing, because I started doing research on it, and I discovered if you look at all spiritual traditions and religions, that the heart has been described as a source of wisdom. So I was looking for people in our time who speak about the heart as a source of wisdom and intelligence. So I just followed my aliveness every time. I was not in my mind too much. It was just okay. What makes me come alive? What is exciting? What is feeding my aliveness? So that's how I produced this. And again, it was with many challenges, but I really was following my aliveness.
Yeah, I know that when we produced a series of programs for this broadcast on mythology, and then they were nominated for a Peabody Award. That wasn't even in my mind when we first started out. It was more, I need to know more about mythology. I need to learn, as I'm doing these interviews with my co-host, because I don't know that. I mean, I'm familiar with some of the names, but the general, the more specific content was beyond me. And then after doing a number of these interviews, I realized amazingly that, I knew a lot more than I thought I knew, but I learned a whole lot more, obviously. So through this process, I'm sure you struggled to some degree. I'm sure the mind in black and white. Again, I love the parallels there. Versus the messages of the heart. I mean, there was that logical lawyer mind just clicking away, going, no, we need to do it this way. You had some internal struggles, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
I wanted to quit every day, especially the first 2-3. No, really, I was like, because my family, my friends thought, he really has gone crazy. Because the moment you start to listen to your heart, you have no outside authority anymore in your life. So nobody understands you anymore, because they think, who is he listening to? Does he think he's Moses? He's listening to God? People don't understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are not listening to their heart. So if the company you work for, or the government is, or the media is not the authority in your life anymore, people start to become confused and they think you're crazy. I had to go through that. It was very, very challenging in the beginning. And I thought, okay, but again, I really felt cut off from my aliveness as a lawyer. I thought, do I have to do this my whole working life, just lawyering and making contracts and. It was not very inspiring, so I thought I might as well start just listening to my heart, because at least then I feel the aliveness and the excitement again. And although it's not a very secure path, it is the path that makes me come alive. And I'd rather have the adventure and the aliveness with all the insecurities that come with it than to live a very secure life, but a very gray life, the black and white life that we started with. So, but it was challenging and it is scary, and I think a lot of people cannot do it. And I was fortunate because maybe if I would have had a family and children, then I think I wouldn't have had the courage to do it, you know, because you have responsibility to other people and to your children. So I was fortunate enough that I didn't have that. So I only had to take care of myself. And I think that is one of the main reasons why I did it, I think.
Did you have any sense of certainty, even through the challenges, even through the struggles, and of course the voices from the others around you? But did you have any undercurrent of certainty when you listened to your heart that allowed you to continue to forge ahead? I mean, I know you mentioned that, you know, it was scary and it was, you know, uncertainties and all of these different things, but when you listened and followed those promptings, did you get that sense of certainty in that context that it's going to be okay? I'm doing fine. I'm on the right path because my guidance is there.
Yeah, I felt it. And a lot of times, something that, you know, Steve Jobs said really helped me. He said at the Stanford commencement speech that he did, he said, you know, he had cancer, I think, already. And he looked into the mirror every day of his life, and he knew, you know, because of his illness, that he was mortal. And he said, you know, I have to be able to look into the mirror every day of my life and be able to say to myself, okay, this is what I really want to do. And he also said, you are already naked. Because, you know, being mortal makes us equal, and, you know, we are already naked because we only are here for a very short time. And I ask myself every day, you know, if I would die tomorrow, is this what I would have done? Is this what I really wanted to do? And every time when I really connected with my heart, with my deeper level, the answer was yes, this is what I really wanted to do. But my mind, my ego, my personality was protesting all the time because it was saying, oh, people don't respect you anymore because you're not a lawyer anymore. You don't have a proper job. Your family doesn't understand you. So it was always my mind that was, you know, scary or afraid or confused. But when I was able to connect in stillness, true stillness, with the deeper level of the heart, and I asked myself, is this what you really wanted to do? Then the answer was always yes.
Hmm.
And I think the fear always comes up when we lose connection with, you know, the essence of who we are. And so I was, you know, I had to go inside. I had to go into the stillness to make the connection with with my essence again. And then, you know, I always felt, yes, I'm doing the right thing with my life right now.
So after going through this 5-year intensive, I'll call it, of making this movie and experiencing what you have of yourself with yourself in regards to your heart.
Yeah.
Have you made it? I mean, now every single moment of your life, are you listening to that voice and are you following your heart and all of those things? Do you never struggle again and you've achieved that?
No, I struggle all the time, and that's the, I mean, it's so good that I've interviewed all those wonderful people, you know, Maya Angelou and Lisa Darien and Paulo Coelho, people whom I really admire, and they all said the same thing. They all said, every day you have to work at it, every day you have to go to the heart, every day you start at zero again, and we all know this, you know. I had it too, you know. Some evenings I'm like, oh my God, my heart is so open. I'm completely there. I'm tapped in. I'm sourced. I'm in the vortex. And then the next morning you wake up again and you think, oh my God, I need coffee. It's so terrible. I don't want to get out of bed. And I have that too. I have that too. So every day you work at it. Every day you have to go back to the heart. Every day you have to make that a priority. I struggle and I have challenges, and what I've learned from all those people that I've interviewed, and I think that's why they are truly the great ones. They were all very humble and they were all showing their vulnerability, about that. They were saying, sometimes it's really challenging. Sometimes it's really hard. Sometimes I'm so angry. Sometimes I'm so frustrated. And showing that makes us real. Showing that is also showing the heart that you say, yes, I'm frustrated. Yes, sometimes it's hard. Yes, sometimes it's really, really difficult. And sometimes we are in a flow, you know. We know it too, like everything is flowing. And I think it's part of life. It's like the heart is not supposed to be open all the time. Sometimes it's closed. And it's good too, you know, when people are mean to us, our heart closes. And that's a natural response, I think. And then it's our task to open it again. That's also how the heart beats, you know. It contracts and then it opens again. So I think that it's all part of the process of life. I think we're not supposed to be here to not go through all those different experiences all the time. Yeah.
Comparing the movie to your book.
There was no intention to create a book. The book only, it really started out of a frustration, to be honest, the book, because I interview all those ones, I travel the world, I interview all those wonderful people on camera, and then you have all these great footage, all this great material, and then you are making a movie, and the movie is supposed to be 90 minutes, like, you know, every normal movie.
Yeah.
Then you are like, oh my God, I have got all these wonderful footage. I've interviewed Paulo Coelho for hours. I've interviewed Maya Angelou for over an hour, and then I can only share a few minutes of this wisdom. How frustrating is that? And I said, okay, the only way I can share more of all the great things they've shared on camera is to create a book, because in the book there's much more information now than in the movie. Editing a movie is really killing all your darlings, and it's really painful when you've got so much great information to share. Yes.
Although today, with our technology, granted, you'd still want to make it, you know, 90 minutes to 2 hours if you can. By the same token, in one sense, I suppose you could make two parts, you know, and expand it in that regard.
Yeah.
But it's still, as you said, it's still a lot of time spent.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
With the book in hand, you're able to flip through and find yeah. those individuals that you resonate with and read what they have to say about the power of the heart. And I think that's what's quite extraordinary and very helpful as well, as sort of a companion to the movie.
Yes, and the other thing is, a lot of people who see the movie, they love it. They really, really love it. But they say, I mean, there's so much information in the movie already. I need to buy the DVD and be able to watch it at home, you know, to be able to push the pause button, because there's so much information already coming in.
Yeah.
And I think people really need to experience this on their own pace, you know. And whenever they feel like, okay, now I just need to ponder this, I just gotta push the pause button, I'm gonna take a break and just, you know, meditate on this. I think everyone has to do it in their own pace and experience this in their own pace. Yeah.
Mm. I know that you mentioned Steve Jobs, and what I found so fascinating, it was a piece of information I did not know about him until after his passing. And it was when another movie that has come out, and that is actually came out last November of 2014, a movie called Awake. It's about the life of Paramahansa Yogananda.
Yes, great movie. Great movie. Go see that movie. Yes.
Oh, it's fabulous. My wife and I went to see it when it was here in Santa Barbara. And it was extraordinary when I was watching the trailers before I had seen the film, where they actually featured a little piece where they talked about Steve Jobs. And they said the only book that was on his iPhone was that book, Autobiography. And I thought, wait a minute, this is a guy who runs a computer company. What's he doing with that book? Well, the man wasn't always a computer geek, you know, kind of thing.
He was a hippie. He was studying. He was going to read college in Oregon.
Yeah.
And he did a lot. You know what? I'm going to India. He was an astronaut, and he was just in India trying to figure out what life was about. And he was, you know, doing the same thing as what I've been doing the past few years. He was trying to figure out what is life about. What is intuition? And he discovered that intuition is able to see much more than our mind. And, you know, I think when he figured all of that out, he said, okay, I'm going to do something with it. I'm going to apply it. The first, you know, we now all use a mouse, you know, when we use our computers.
Mm-hmm.
The first time he saw a mouse at Xerox, and this was just, you know, a very early model, he really became like crazy. He was like, oh my God, this is the future of computing. And nobody understood why he was so excited about it. But he saw something. He saw what the future of computing would be. And nobody else saw it, but he knew it at that point. And that is not something that's not information that comes to you through your thinking. It's information that comes to you through your intuition, through your feeling. And he had that because he was tapped into that. And I know he was not the nicest person, and he could be brutal to people, but he was also very connected to his heart's intuition. Yeah.
I think that's one of the sad things about our media today, and not just today, but it's been going on for years, and that is that we never really get to know the real person behind the persona, whether it's Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or anybody else, even some of these folks that you've had, like Maya Angelou and so forth. I mean, she comes across as a very humble, very gentle soul. But, you know, we get these perceptions of so many people, and it's like, yeah, but is that really who they are? Is that what they're portraying, or is that how they're portrayed? We never really get to know them like we might, you know, a neighbor or a coworker or things of this nature. And I find that really unfortunate, because there are times when you'll hear those kinds of stories, like, You described, and I know this is, it's not telling secrets because everybody knows his temperament towards maybe some of his coworkers and so forth. Okay, but he also had another side to him. But I don't recall ever hearing about that until just recently.
I don't know if you've read the biography Isaacson, Walter Isaacson. He mm-hmm. wrote. He worked on this together with Steve Jobs.
Yeah,
it's a great biography where they also go into really into his period in India and his spiritual search. It's really interesting. Yeah.
Well, I have to say too that you are quite extraordinary in your own light and in your own right, because of what you have done, but also the people you've connected with. And that must have been a life-altering experience as well. You knew all these people by name and reputation from various sources, but to have the opportunity to sit down and be, I'm going to put it in this context, and be affected by them and their energy.
Yes.
Those had to be transforming experiences too, just extraordinary.
Oh, yes. I mean, it was really extraordinary. I mean, I think one of the most memorable days was when I had the opportunity to interview Dr. Maya Angelou.
Mm.
And we went to her home in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And when we were there, something happened. I mean, this woman really had an incredible presence, and you could feel it. She really felt of the room. And when she started to speak, it was almost the voice of God. I mean, Bill Clinton said something beautiful on her funeral service, and it really resonated with me because it was exactly my experience. He said, Maya Angelou, she stopped speaking when she was eight because she was raped at eight, and she told her uncles who had raped her, and, you know, the person who raped her got killed. And then she got really afraid because she realized, oh, my God, my voice has the power to kill people. So she didn't speak for 5 years, and she started speaking again when she was 13.
Mm.
And Bill Clinton said when she was 13, she started speaking again, and she had the voice of God.
Mm.
And that's really how I felt. It felt like, oh my God, this is almost the voice of God. That's how powerful her voice was, and how powerful her presence was. And then Bill Clinton said at a funeral service, I know why she passed, because God gave her his voice when she was 13, and she passed because God wanted his voice back for a while. and that really resonated with me because, you know, she passed in, I think, May last year, and we were still in the middle of the production, you know. And we, I mean, I was in the editing room and looking at her face every day because I was editing. And then all of a sudden you hear, oh, my God, she passed. And I was listening and watching her every day. I cannot describe what that did with everyone who was in the editing room when we heard that she passed. We were like, oh, my God, what is this going to, you know, mean for a movie? And how are we going to deal with this? And we got a lot of phone calls from the U.S. The movie is coming out and she is in it. And, you know, people will think, you know, you're trying to capitalize on her passing, and the last thing we wanted to do. But we know, because she has this iconic status in the U.S., that we had to be really careful with it, because, you know, she's not that well-known in Europe, where I come from, so there was not that sensitivity about it.
Right,
But in the U.S., I mean, she would, I mean, you know, I mean, Michelle Obama was speaking on her funeral, Bill Clinton was speaking on her funeral, Oprah Winfrey was speaking on her funeral. This was a state funeral, right? I mean, this was like, you know, the Queen Mother of the U.S. passed, and there was a sensitivity about it. But I see everywhere in the world, I'm doing shows all over the world, outside the U.S., people who don't know her, who see her for the first time, who hear her voice for the first time, they all are captivated by it. They're all touched by it. So she has this universal quality of speaking and conveying the message of the heart. So, it was really a transforming experience to be able to work with her.
Unfortunately, we have run out of time, and I thank you so much, Baptiste de Papethor, joining us and talking to us about the film and the book, The Power of the Heart. ThepowerofTheHeart.com is the website, and if you're ever in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to talk further.
Oh, thank you so much, Richard. It was a pleasure and an honor to be on your show.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.